You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on foxsports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. What day is it? Happy Thursday. Christian Clemente in the studio. I'm just messing around, man. Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com with us. It's good to see you, my man.
Good to see you, too. Happy to be here. We've had some really great weather the past couple days. Outside of the heavy storms, but hey, those were all overnight. So
that's right. It's been a great day so far here at Auburn Network, and if you want to call in 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502, we're going to have the phone lines open for the entire show today. Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com with me for the entire first hour of the show. We're going to be talking basketball as well as Auburn football. A lot of great stuff going on the show today. If you want to call in, once again, phone lines are open for the entire 2 hours today. Going to start off with Christian now on basketball, and I want to put a bow on the basketball season because everything that you said in the preseason when we were having you on back in whenever it was, August, I think.
I think it was like June.
It may have been June, all the way back July, then. When you were watching summer practices, right, and you would come on and you'd give us the story, you'd give us the detail, everything that you said came true. This team was as good as advertised.
Yeah, I mean, this was a special team that ended in a unfortunate way. I mean, Auburn fans and the Auburn team especially are very disappointed with the ending to it, and I think that's fair. But I also don't think it's fair to say the season was a disappointment necessarily, because you watched a lot of historic stuff, and not just on the court. I mean, you saw the number one ranking, and you saw Walker Kessler, block record, triple-double. I mean, just Jabari Smith as a whole, Katie Johnson's antics, Wendell Green hitting half-court shots. You saw all this historic stuff. But then there was also all the stuff off the court, the post-game memes, the Peacock, Neville Arena, you know, the
Jungle City.
Jungle City, yeah. The list goes on. This was an incredible season that should be looked on positively. And I think even just from a couple days ago to now, fans are starting to come around a little bit and realize that it was a special season. And, you know, it ended unfortunately, but it should be looked on positively.
Now, I'm going to play little devil's advocate with you here just to get your thoughts on this, because I said this on yesterday's show, and I don't disagree with you. A lot of historic things happened. A lot of great things happened. It was a really fun season in the thick of it. Does the end make it forgettable in the event that better endings for future seasons come down the line, right? Because we don't really remember the way that 2017-2018 ended, which was a year of historic first for Auburn because they broke their tournament streak, right? And they won the regular season championship that year, but we don't remember it because maybe of a negative ending there at the end, getting smacked by Clemson in the second round and then also the Final Four after it. So I'm curious, do you think that future teams can maybe make this year more forgettable?
I certainly think that's possible. That's a good point, but I also just don't think that you're going to be able to forget some of the things. You're never going to forget seeing Jabari Smith.
I mean, no, you're not.
Maybe not even 5 years down the line, you're going to be watching him in an NBA All-Star game and say, hey, I got to see him right there at Auburn Arena. And you're not going to forget that. You're not going to forget Walker Kessler getting a triple-double. You're not going to forget the kids
doubles.
Camping. Yeah,
double-doubles.
You're not going to forget the kids camping outside of the stadium and, you know, doing that for the first time. That'll start happening again in the future, but you're not going to forget the first time it happened, you know, the big fundraiser that happened for it, all that stuff. So I don't think some of the things will certainly never be forgotten.
Likewise, here's another question going on with what you just said. Could this year be viewed as the season, maybe if Auburn has, once again, better finishes down the line, and we look at the way that Auburn basketball is recruiting right now, it definitely hit another level this year. We've talked about that already. The types of guys that they're attracting, starting with Jabari Smith, it kind of hit another level this year. Do you think this year will be viewed as a year maybe where Auburn kind of entered into a new kind of crossed over a new threshold in college basketball, maybe entered major power status?
Yes, I certainly think so. Just in terms of the national attention they get. They're on a lot of nationally televised games. A lot of recruits see Jabari Smith playing. They see his highlights on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. They see the mock drafts of him going number one. They see Walker Kessler shooting up draft boards and whatnot. There was so much attention around this year's team on a national level that helps them recruiting in a huge way. And you're seeing that as they progress towards next season's roster and, you know, even like the class of 2023 and whatnot.
Putting a bow on the Auburn basketball season with Christian Clemente of auburnsports.com. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. What will you remember the most of this Auburn basketball season, or how will you remember this Auburn basketball season? I think it's a great question to ask the folks out there. Your final take on Auburn basketball and the way it all ended this year.
Yeah, I mean, I said for a while that I didn't think Auburn peaked. I still stand by that. I still think they could have played better at some point. But I also think they got figured out just a little bit, and they never adapted to that. That's kind of my main takeaway towards the end of the season.
I think that's a great point. They definitely had more potential. They just never reached it.
Yeah, they never reached their potential, and I think they just got figured out. And instead of adapting, they kind of kept playing their game. You know, as the season went on a little bit more, you saw some of the other role players take smaller roles, kind of, and it was a lot of Jabari and Walker, which is not how the team thrived earlier in the year. You know, you saw big contributions from Wendell, big contributions from KD, and you still got those at times, but the contributions from just some of the other guys slimmed down a little bit, and it really turned into a lot of Jabari and Walker, which is good. Those are fantastic players, but when they shoot 3 for 22, like they did against Miami, and they're completely shut down, then it becomes a problem. Because
it's also easier to isolate front court players too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think they got figured out a little bit.
Do you think that the coaching staff, and I'm not knocking the coaching staff whatsoever, but let's be honest, there were things that probably could have been managed better maybe down the stretch. Do you think that the coaching staff, have they mentioned anything that maybe they've learned from this season? Because it was a bit of uncharted territory. Bruce hasn't had a player like Jabari Smith, and he hasn't had a big man like a Walker Kessler. And we saw for the first time Bruce Pearl kind of shrink the roster as the season went on rather than expand it. And I remember the quote that he said towards the end of season. We said, you know, if I've got a – I think it was the South Carolina game. After the game, he mentioned, you know, if I'm going to talk about how I'm going to play 10 guys, I better walk the walk, you know, instead of just talking the talk. And so I'm kind of curious, do you think the coaching staff maybe has gleaned anything from the way that this season ended?
You know, that'd be tough to tell. We've only talked to Bruce just in the post game.
Yeah.
But,
and we probably won't know until future seasons.
Yeah, we probably won't know for a little bit. I certainly think there's takeaways that they're going to get from it, and things that they'll learn, move forward with. This is a really smart coaching staff as a whole, and especially Bruce. And
crafty.
Yeah. That, look, going into, not to get too far into next year, but it's a reload. It's not a rebuild.
100%. Of course, there is roster building to do during the offseason. I think I said this 2 days ago. You look at the Auburn roster, and I don't mean this negatively about these guys on the roster, because I think all of these guys have potential. I think they're good basketball players. But just being completely honest, the best parts of Auburn's basketball team, they're leaving. More than likely. I mean, you would assume Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler both are going to the NBA. And what's left, arguably, were some of Auburn's flaws during the season, I think, and definitely some areas where those guys need to improve. So there is roster building to be had, but you look at how this coaching staff is recruited and how they have thrived in the transfer portal, namely last year, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about what you said, a reload, not necessarily a rebuild.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. And the biggest thing for me, too, is I would expect guys like Wendell Green, guys like KD, Zepp, assuming he does end up coming back, which he said he would, but you know, you just truly never know. I honestly think Auburn's guards will be the strength of next year's team. With a year of development and more chemistry together, and bringing in Trey Donaldson and Chance Westry. Westry kind of is a two or a three, could play the one as well.
But can he shoot well?
He can shoot pretty good, yeah.
But that's not his MO. Maybe he's more of an all-around guy. Maybe compare him to a guy that Auburn's had in the past. Would Mustafa Heron be a good comparison?
Mustafa is actually a little before my time, so I don't know his game quite as well. But Chance is
a... He was a mid-range, could shoot the three, but it wasn't his... It was not his first tool in his belt. He was more of an athlete, all-around scorer. Could do a lot of things well, but I don't think you would point out any one thing to be excellent, other than maybe his mid-range jump shot. His mid-range jump shot was off the charts, I thought.
I would say that's probably fair, but I would say Chance's defense is probably his strength. He's an incredibly strong defender, so that backcourt defense gets even better with him. He can play the one through the three, and he's 6'6". So
kind of a combo guard.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I like Chance's game a lot.
Auburn needs a 6'6" player.
Yeah. So
he's Malik Dunbar with handles. That's exactly what it is.
No, but I think Auburn's guards will honestly be a strength next year. I really do. I know they were kind of a weakness at some points this year, and they got criticism fairly so at times, but I think that'll be a strength next year. Even though they are bringing in, you know, I would expect them to get Yohan Traore, the 5-star power forward / center. I think he'll be a center.
And I
want
to stress to everybody that you pronounce that Yohan.
Yeah, Yohan.
I like that.
And he's a kind of a stretch five, I guess I would say. More face up, not a ton of back to the basket, but he can do that.
He's a jump out of the gym athlete.
Yes.
Which would fit the fact that he was recruited by LSU.
Yeah.
He's a dunk on you kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
But he can also shoot. He's not going to shoot as good as Jabari Smith, but he's not going to shoot as poorly from three as Walker Kessler. Maybe a
McLemore type, a 32% kind of guy.
I think that's probably fair. Maybe a little bit better than that.
Enough to be danger.
Yeah, exactly. But
enough to draw the defense out. I like it.
Assuming you get him and play him at stretch five, you have Jalen at the four. Your front court is very solid, and you have Dylan back as the backup center behind Yohan, probably. Maybe bring in a transfer to back up Jalen at the four, or just another big man in general that could play the four or the five. And your front court's looking pretty good.
What are the odds that maybe Auburn brings in, maybe switches a little bit more to kind of positionless basketball, that maybe they bring in a few guys that are in that 6'6" to 6'8" range that are just overall athletes, kind of the Arkansas mold, and they could play power forward behind Jalen Williams, but they could also maybe play the three.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think they could do that.
It's just really early. Season's not even over yet,
yeah.
And the transfer portal is not full of bodies yet.
No, I think they could do that. There were some guys that they were recruiting in the 23 class. Stephon Castle, he ended up going to UConn, or committing to UConn, I should say. But they really liked him, and he's 6'6", but they liked him as a one through like a three. Could play the four because they think he'll be like 6'8", 6'9", once he gets in college.
Wow.
So they're certainly looking at that as a possibility, I know. With Bruce's system now, though, the four and the five are the same spot, and the two and the three are the same spot. So if you have someone that is kind of that range, you kind of have to pick a spot. That's why we didn't see a lot of the, you know, some people wanted to see the super tall lineup with Walker, Jabari, and Jalen this year. Didn't see it a whole lot because the three and the two are the same, and the three and the four are not the same. So
two and the three in the system are wing players,
yeah.
Not inside.
So they could certainly, with an offseason, adapt that and change that, and that's certainly a possibility. I think they'll look at that, but it'll just kind of depend on the players that they bring in.
Of course, I mentioned the transfer portal, and I said it's not full of bodies yet, but it is full of one body, and that's Devin Cambridge entering the transfer portal today. Your thoughts on this move for Devin? Because I think this is pretty expected.
Yeah, I've been expecting this for a little bit now, and it's a move that's probably best for both parties. Devin gradually improved in certain areas during his time at Auburn. He became a better free throw shooter, went from being a liability on defense to being honestly a pretty strong defender, became great at crashing the glass and really kind of embraced that role of just
being a bounce man.
Yeah. He always brought the electric dunks. That was always the same all 3 years. But what you really needed and what Bruce really needs out of his wing players is pretty strong three-point shooting, and he got worse there all 3 years. So
by a sizable amount.
Yeah. He went from 34-something percent his freshman year to now he finished 22% this year. And I think I'd have to look at the stat, but towards the second half of SEC play, it was 10%. Like, it was very, very bad. So, I think it's a good move for Devin. I think he can go somewhere else, probably have a little bit of a bigger role, maybe be a starter somewhere. The report was out today that his brother, who's transferring from Nevada, they're going to team up together.
Now that's a shooter.
Yeah, they're going to team up together wherever they end up going. So it's a good move for Devin, be with his brother, be in a little bit of a bigger role. And I think for Auburn, it clears up a spot at the wing to bring in a better shooter, which is really what Auburn needs going into next year.
Looking at maybe other guys that could transfer off of this roster, of course, right now. I actually want to ask you another question first, because Cambridge leaves. This now frees up another scholarship. By my count, assuming that Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith left, along with Preston Cook's scholarship as well, Auburn would have had 11 scholarship players going into this year before Devin Cambridge transferred out. So now is it 10? And then on top of that, when is Auburn going to take that scholarship reduction from the NCAA?
Okay, so I'm not sure when they're going to take the scholarship reduction. It could be this year. I mean, I don't think the scholarship reduction is that big of a deal.
It was like 2 over 4 years or 2 over 8?
It's 2 over 4, I think.
Okay.
But it's just, I mean, you just have to take it once, like 1 year. Like, theoretically, this year, if they didn't put Preston on scholarship, they could have taken it.
Sure.
But you don't need 12 scholarship guys or 13, or you don't need that many, basically.
Right, because I mean, most programs, look at Duke, they play like 8 guys in a game.
Yeah, exactly. Bruce played 9 this year. They could have played maybe 10 or 11 if Chris Moore and Stretch played a little bit more, but either way, you don't need that many. Going into next year, they have, you know, assuming Jabari and Walker are gone, Chance and Trey will take those scholarship spots. Devin is now out, so you have a scholarship open there, and you have a scholarship open with Preston. So theoretically, you have 2 more scholarship spots open for next year.
And you potentially could maybe, and I highly doubt they're, just my vibe is that they're probably not going to take that reduction going into next year. They're probably going to need to fill those 2 spots with transfers or a 5-star recruit such as Yoan Traore.
Yeah. I don't know, though. We'll just kind of have to see because I think, I mean, you were going to ask it in the next question, but I think we could see a couple more guys.
Yeah, that's also true.
Depart here.
So. Potentially a Chris Moore or Alan Flanagan or Stretch Akinbo. I think those would be the 3 most likely guys moving forward.
Yeah, and let me just preface this by saying, I've got nothing to back this up. This is just kind of speculating a little bit. And it's just,
this day and age with the transfer portal. When guys aren't playing, you expect those guys to be the most likely players to leave.
Yeah, you would speculate guys like Chris and Stretch who had a little bit bigger roles previous years and were really kind of afterthoughts on the bench this year might look towards going somewhere else. But they were also really strong locker room presences. And
they love Auburn.
Yeah, and they love Auburn. So there's certainly no guarantee they could leave. Alan Flanagan, I think, is a possibility, and I think some of that hinges on whether or not Wes gets a head coaching job. I know, I think Louisiana Tech was reportedly...
Okay, so he's in the mix. Like, this isn't just hearsay. Like, he's in the mix.
Yeah, I think Louisiana Tech was reportedly interested in him, and some other schools will probably be interested in him as well. So I think that'll kind of hinge, or Alan's decision might hinge on that a little bit. But also, I don't think it necessarily fully hinges on that. He could come back next year. Even if his dad leaves, he could leave even if his dad stays here. So that one's kind of up in the air. I think that one is a lot more speculation than the other guys because the other guys, you saw Chris and you saw Stretch's role really decrease to almost nothing.
It's easier to say those guys can go and find more playing time elsewhere, maybe at a smaller school.
Yeah.
Because we've seen many examples of this.
Mm-hmm. But with Alan, it's just kind of a situation where it's like, He didn't have the year that he wanted. He was clearly frustrated. And it's just in a really unfortunate situation where he has to deal with that Achilles injury, doesn't come back until later into the season. He's just not quite the same player, still trying to figure out kind of who he is as a player and also stepping into a role where he went from being like the guy all of 2020 to like the 5th guy in the starting lineup, basically.
If he even.
Yeah.
Definitely out of the starting lineup, but I would argue Jalen Williams played a bigger role offensively
Jalen
on this team.
And Wendell, yeah. So it was just a tough situation. Look, a lot of fans have given up on Allen. I have not. I still think he can be a fantastic player. I just think this year was a really unfortunate situation of I mean, it was basically like his sophomore year, to be honest, because like last year he was a point guard the whole time, which is not what
he
is.
He didn't play a whole lot as a freshman.
Yeah. So this was like his second true year, and it was spent – I mean, he said he was at like 80, 85%. He wasn't 100%. So, I mean, I haven't given up on Alan Flanagan. I still think he can be a really good player. There's a reason we saw him in NBA mock drafts. I'll say that. I still think he could be in the league.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, you wrote an article about a too early look at the 2022-2023 depth chart. Let's break that down when we come back. Twenty-two minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com with us for the Thursday edition of the program. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Phone lines are open for the entire show. And if you want to ask Christian any questions about things going on, feel free to call in. Christian, you wrote an article, AuburnSports.com, broke down the potential 2022-2023 depth chart in its fledgling state, because it's going to look drastically different, I would imagine.
Yeah, let me tell you, that's not an easy article to write, because there's...
Or was it? Because really, you didn't have to change a whole lot yet. All you had to do was say...
Well, that's true.
It will change.
Yeah, but...
Or, and just put or transfer on a lot of different places.
Yeah, pretty much. But, I mean, I think you'll see the backcourt stay the same.
That seems to be the most solidified.
Yeah, backcourt stays the same. Bring in Trey, who could play the one or the two. Bring in Chance, who could play the one through the three. And then the front court and kind of the three as well is where you'll see some changes. You've already seen Devin leave. I mean, you could see Chris and Allen leave, theoretically. And then you have Chance at the three. And you'd have to bring in some transfers there.
Could he start at small forward?
I think he could. I think he could.
So he's more of a shooting guard in your mind?
I think he's more of a shooting guard to start. Okay. I think he might need to put on just a little bit more weight and muscle.
Yeah, not really a rebounding threat at small forward, probably.
Yeah, I think he'd be just – he has the height. I think he would just still be a little too small.
Okay.
But he certainly can play the three, and he will at times next year. But I would expect him more at the two, maybe. And then, you know, the front court is where it really starts to mix up a little bit. I think Jalen Williams, it's pretty easy. You see him just slide into the starting spot at the four. I mean, Bruce said it after the game. We're going to build it around Jalen next year. And they've got really high hopes for him, and for good reason. You saw it his sophomore year when he was starting at the five. You saw 20-point explosions, and you saw even off the bench, he ended the season in a fantastic way. His last two games, you know, in 7 minutes against Jacksonville State, he had a great game before leaving with that tooth injury. Oh, man. And then he comes back against Miami, and still in limited time off the bench, he has another fantastic game.
Oh, he was the most consistent player in the postseason for Auburn.
Yeah. So
wasn't even close.
I mean, I think Jalen Williams starting at the four next year is perfect. You look at guys like Julian Phillips, who is decommitted from LSU, who's kind of a three or a four, as a potential option at the three or the four for Auburn next year, you know, starting or coming off the bench or whatever. But either way, that's a potential option. If Auburn's able to get him, it's kind of Auburn and the G League battling it out there, along with some other schools.
The old friend, the G League.
Yep. But
I really thought that it would fade into the background a little bit with NIL. But I don't know if we've seen NIL really impact basketball as much as we've seen it impact football.
I don't know. I think it has to some extent. Guys like Nick Smith, if you remember him, who Auburn was in the mix for, and Arkansas ended up getting. I mean, he had some really big offers elsewhere. But Arkansas also, because of NIL, had a very big offer for him. And so he ended up going
Walmart! Dropping the bag! I'm joking. So, I don't know if it was Walmart, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I think it's impacted basketball enough. It's done enough. The G League is still there, though. It's not going away. But Julian Phillips is an option there at the four or at the three.
Have we legit seen the G League like help a player though too? Like think about that. I mean, Jalen Green went second overall in the draft, but like have we legit seen the G League like actually do anything?
I mean, I think for the players, they don't have to pretend to go to school.
And they get $200,000.
Yeah, and they get a lot of money and they can just focus on basketball the whole time. For a guy like Scoot Henderson, you know, who was at one point a silent commit to Auburn and was very close to coming here.
But he's popped off in the G League, and, like, we don't hear anything.
Well, yeah, that's
it.
The thing. You get less attention in the G League. But also, you know, the scouts and whatnot, they're not looking on social media to find the players.
True.
So it's just less of a personal brand building, I guess you could say. Like, Jabari Smith, if he went to the G League, his personal brand would be a lot smaller than it was from coming to Auburn. Player-wise, it probably would have been about the same, but he grew himself as a person and his personal brand.
I really question if he would have been the number one overall draft pick. And we don't know if he's going to be the number one overall draft pick, but I actually really question if he would even be in the conversation for number one over Paolo Banchero and Chet Holmgren if he hadn't gone to college.
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
I think it helps. I don't know. I'm going
it hasn't been going on long enough.
I'm going at my point that I just made, but to some extent, getting that spotlight does help.
Yeah.
The scouts, yes.
Not social media, but ESPN, let's just be real. Being on TV helps.
Yeah. Yeah, people take note of that. People take note of a posterizing dunk that Jabari Smith has, stuff like that. So, yeah, getting back all the way back to the main point of the rotation now. And then the five is also, I think the five, assuming you get Yoan Traore, who's supposed to make a decision sometime next week, I think that's pretty well set with him. And then Dylan Cardwell coming off the bench again. Maybe Stretch if he decides to come back, but that one's kind of up in the air, I think. So I think you're pretty well set at the five. It's the four and the three that seem like they could have a decent amount of movement here.
We don't have this roster yet. We don't see a finished product. But my question to you is this, I want you to just take a shot in the dark here.
I think I know where you're going with this.
NCAA tournament seed next year.
Seed?
Seed.
Ooh, I thought you were going to say if they're better or worse.
Kinda is the same question, but just kind of curious where your vibe is with this team right now.
I would say like a three or a four seed.
Really?
Not because I think they're worse, but I just don't. I mean, you have to go, like, Auburn went on an incredible winning streak run this year.
Just to get to a 1-2. There's just very little margin for error.
And the SEC will probably be very good again next year. And I mean, Auburn won the SEC, but that's not easy. Like, it's going to be extremely difficult again next year.
They almost blew it this year.
Yeah. So I'll say like a three or a four seed, but they're going to contend for like the SEC regular season title and whatnot. I think Auburn will still be very good next year.
I like it. I like the optimism. Let's take a quick break here. You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Christian Clemente from AuburnSports.com on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Thursday, everybody. We are 33 minutes into the Thursday edition of the show, and we've been talking some basketball with Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com, and I have two questions for you before we move on to football. First one, a guy that I've forgotten to mention, somebody that we've both forgotten to mention, and we've been talking about shooters, and this guy knows how to shoot. Shot better than 40% this year. Is Lior Berman going to play more? I want it. I know he lacks in some other areas that you need to have to be able to be on the floor for significant minutes, but every time he came on the floor, pretty much, he dropped a three.
I think he could play a little bit next year, but I don't think it'll be too much bigger of a role than we saw this year.
I'm just saying they flirted with it this year, man. And he clearly got better. Like, what are the odds that he gets better again?
Yeah, but he also did deal with a foot injury. And so I don't know the extent of that, to be honest. I didn't really look into it and ask anything about it.
Because if not, I hope this man transfers and goes and plays somewhere else and becomes an absolute beast.
I mean, I could see that.
Like, I hope he leads a Wofford to an NCAA tournament and upset victory over somebody. I want it. Inject it into my veins.
I could see that, but I could also just see him coming back and being a role player next year to some extent.
He's so good at shooting the three. I need to see this guy playing major minutes somewhere. I know he can't play major minutes at Auburn. There's an athleticism gap there, rebounding, defense. Like, all that's a problem, right? That's why he comes on in the last couple of minutes. But he can shoot the three like no other, man. I got to believe this guy can score. You're the one who's seen him in practice. He can score it, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Like, he would be good at a mid-major, wouldn't he?
I think he'd be good at a mid-major, yeah.
Like, what if this guy went back to where he's from, Birmingham, and played some Bucky ball with Samford?
That'd be good.
Dream come true. I'm not rooting for the guy to leave or anything like that. I'm just rooting for him to succeed and play. How many years does he have left? Just the one, I think? I think he's got one left. Or maybe two?
I'll be honest, I really don't know.
That's okay. And then my last question to you, the latest with basketball recruiting. It's early. I'm sure you'll have more in the next month or so when the transfer portal fills up. But kind of the latest right now with basketball recruiting, where it all stands.
Yeah, definitely Yoan Traore as he heads into a decision next week. Julian Phillips, both of those guys are LSU decommits. Yoan being a kind of a stretch five, could play the four. Julian Phillips is a 3-4, pretty prototypical 3-and-D guy. I think he'd be a great addition if Auburn's able to get him. Those are kind of the main guys I'm looking out for now, along with Elijah Fisher, who's in the class of 2023, is the number 15 overall player. but he's looking at reclassifying, and that's kind of Auburn, G League, and maybe Texas Tech to some extent.
Having Scoot Henderson. Flashbacks.
So
it's exactly what that feels like, trying to get the guy to reclassify and then potentially goes to the G League.
A little bit, yeah. But Auburn's certainly in the mix there.
That's good. That's good. So bright future in front, and then we'll find out more about potential transfer options. I'll say this, Murray State Racer entered the portal. We all know that Auburn folks love Murray State Racers. Justice Hill entered the portal. Think there's any interest there? Auburn's probably not in the market for a point guard.
No, I don't think so. I think if Tevin Brown had entered the portal, they would have had some interest. But he declared for the draft. Now, technically, he can come back.
But we think this guy's a first-round pick.
Is he really a first-round pick?
I think he's in mocks. I have seen him in mocks, I think.
Okay, well, if he's a first-round pick.
Let me do some research, okay. But I think he's in some mocks.
If he's a first-round pick, he should not come back to Murray State, come back and transfer to Auburn, come back and transfer to LSU or whatever. He should go to the NBA in that case. But if he's not, and he does sign with an NCAA-certified agent, technically he can go through most of the draft process, and there's a withdrawal date where he could end up coming back, and he could be an option. Now, granted, by that point, I think Auburn's roster will probably be full, if I had to guess, unless he does it quickly. But I don't know. We'll just kind of have to wait and see with Tevin. But either way, I mean, if he's going to the NBA and if he'll be a first-round pick, good for him. And I think Auburn fans will root for him and be very happy for him.
Maybe I just had a dream about it. Maybe I dreamt about it. I don't know.
I mean, I know he's on draft boards and, like, maybe a second-round pick. I just wasn't sure if he was a first-round guy or not.
Yeah, I'm wrong, man. I'm wrong. I think I just dreamt that. I have no idea. I'm going to keep doing research to find it, but I'm pretty sure I dreamt that. That's sad. That's very sad. I was really rooting for this guy to be the next big thing in out of Murray State going to the NBA. I know he wouldn't be Ja Morant, but I was really rooting for that. Let's switch gears to football while I keep looking up Tevin Brown, NBA draft prospects. Football season. Believe it or not, like I was saying this to Jacob the other day, right? Because summer practices, coaches don't get to lead that. So you really only have a handful more in the spring, and then you really only get like 4 or 5 weeks in the fall. I mean, is that not crazy to think that Auburn really only has like 8 weeks of practices left, and not even 8 full weeks of practice because they don't practice every day? Is that not crazy that they literally only have like 8 weeks left of like legitimate practice time before Auburn football plays another game?
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
And when you couple that perspective with what's currently on the football field right now, does that create panic?
Maybe a little bit. But it's more so like they just need to get some guys here, man. I mean, it is a thin spring roster right now because they have guys that still need to – freshmen that still need to get here. They still have 10 spots available through the transfer portal they could use. I don't know if they'll use all 10, but either way, that's 10 players. Like, when you go out there for a practice and the viewing windows that we have, I mean, it is thin out there. And you look at the roster online, it is just thin. So maybe to some extent it is a little concerning there's only like 8 weeks, but that's still a lot of time. So,
and there's the summer for them to work out themselves. And a lot of it's also film room and learning the system and whatnot. I mean, I don't mean to say that because in reality there's, you know, 7 months or however long. No, not 7 months. There's like 5 months or however long it is, right, for them to actually get right for the season. But in reality, like actual practice time, there's not that long. And that's what's kind of interesting to think about, that nobody actually thinks about that way. They're like, oh, we got to August. Not really. You've only got a handful of practices left in the spring and then about 4 weeks in the fall. And so I'm kind of curious where you think this team is at right now in comparison to where this coaching staff maybe wants them to be at.
That's tough to say a little bit.
Especially with how quiet the coaching staff is.
Yeah, but also, like, we had a media viewing window yesterday, and it was one of the worst ones I've seen. In terms of just a lot of missed throws, a lot of drop passes, just a lot of, like, sloppy stuff all around. But we've had more earlier this spring where they were really good. I think we've had 4 in total. 3 have been really good, and yesterday's was bad. So you're asking me that, and it's kind of a little bit of recency bias from what I've seen. But I think they're taking steps forward. I'm discounting yesterday's. I think yesterday was an anomaly.
Sometimes guys have a bad practice.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they picked it up after you guys left.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were there for like 20, 25 minutes. You only see a portion of practice, and that's just kind of the way it goes. And even to some extent as well, you know, some of the drop passes I saw, they were catching looking into the sun. And he even said to the coach, like, I can't see anything. And that's just kind of the way it goes. So we only got to see a little portion. I'm discounting that. I'm just saying that's an anomaly moving forward. I think guys are taking steps forward. The quarterback room as a whole, with D. Davis gone now, you're seeing that competition start to thin. I think you're seeing guys start to step up a little bit. I've been impressed with what I've seen out of T.J. Finley as a leader and as a football player. He seems to have progressed. He looks a little bit better. Now, granted, he's sitting in a pocket in practice, and he's not facing pressure. The offensive line is not collapsing in on him.
It's not live.
Yeah, exactly. But I've been impressed with what I've seen out of him. I like what I see out of Holden Gerner. He seems really, really good for a freshman. I don't know if he'll be able to start right away. I think he's – the best way I can explain him is he's like a sponge out there. He looks like he's trying to pick up everything he can. He's fully listening to the coaches, fully listening to other players, watching them go through drills.
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, brought his apple to school. I like it.
Yeah. But I like what I see out of Holden. I like what I see out of Robbie Ashford, too. He's got a good arm. He's mobile. Couple knocks on him is it always looks like he's trying to turn two. He's a baseball player. It always looks like he's a shortstop trying to get it to first and trying to turn two as quickly. Like his throws
kind of sidearm-esque?
Not necessarily sidearm, but like his throws come in hard. And like he is always trying to get the ball there as quickly as possible. And sometimes you just got to have some touch.
Lacking touch, yeah.
A little bit. So I think he could progress that.
Oh, no. Flashbacks to people saying Bo Nix throws the ball too hard.
But I like what I see out of Robbie and Zach as well. He's been going through practice in non-contact jersey just because that left shoulder. I think it was a surgery that he had, but they're just.
Is it because Auburn made it go numb?
It is, actually. It's from the Auburn game. But
I figured it was.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that guy's whole left side of his body went numb. Yeah. I mean, maybe not the entire left side, but then he came back in the game six plays later or so. And Auburn fans don't want this dude? Like, what? This guy is a machine. I want that guy.
No, I like Zach. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to Zach versus TJ. And TJ will probably have the upper hand going into fall just because he's gone through all the spring, or he will go through all the spring, I should say. Well, Zach won't be able to go through some of the live stuff. And then it'll probably be those two battling it out. But I wouldn't discount Robbie, and I wouldn't discount Holden either. I genuinely really don't know who will be the quarterback next year.
But I would assume because of what happened with Demetrius Davis, this coaching staff, for lack of a better word, they didn't cut Demetrius Davis, but they made a cut in the quarterback competition, I would assume. They established maybe a pecking order.
I think that's fair to say. Now, granted, when we got to see practice, he was acting as the second quarterback, but that could have just been because he's been here the second longest behind TJ. But, you know, I think D is a really, really good kid, really good quarterback to have in the room. I think he needs to progress in a lot of different ways. He stood out, and not in a good way, when we got to go to the media viewing windows. The throws were off consistently. And it just seemed to kind of lack arm strength a little bit. I think he could be really good somewhere else, going maybe back home to Texas, go to like a Houston, go to an SMU with Rhett Lashley or something like that. I think he could be good in the right system, but I think the writing was on the wall for D for quite a while now. And to his credit, he committed to Gus, signed when there was not a coach, ended up sticking it through with Harsin.
Oh, he paid his dues.
Yeah.
He did his thorough due diligence.
He was here for a while. He even ended up staying after not getting any reps in the bowl game or anything like that. He ended up staying, stuck it out through a little bit of spring practice. I thought it was a little weird timing because now he's stuck and he can't go through Auburn's spring and he can't go through somewhere else's spring. So it's a little bit of a weird timing, but also it gives him a head start to try and start looking somewhere else, maybe commit somewhere and start looking at their playbook and learning that. So credit to him, and I just think the writing was on the wall there for a while.
Best thing you've seen so far, best take you have so far about Auburn football at this point?
Ooh. I've been very
reasons for optimism.
Yeah. I've been impressed outside of yesterday. The four quarterbacks I think have been good, and they've been building on each other. It's not a bitter competition. It's friendly and trying to help each other and trying to help everybody out as a whole, not as an individual. And then I've been very, very, very impressed with Derek Hall, just as a player and as a person. You know, that edge room is extremely thin right now with just Derek, Eku, and Dylan Brooks as the scholarship guys. They're going to bring in one, maybe two more guys through the transfer portal. But, I mean, they've brought walk-ons over from the offense to go play edge on defense. And Derek helps them through every drill. He's an incredible leader out there, and he's an incredible player too. So I've been just very impressed getting to stand there and watch drills, you know, 10, 15 feet away and just getting to hear what he says and stuff like that.
What's Owen Papo's role right now through the spring?
He's, you know, he is dealing with that injury, or he had surgery to kind of clean up the injury that he dealt with. But he's out there at every practice. He has one of the scooter carts, and he's always wheeling around, trying to help out the defense, trying to do whatever he can to be kind of a leader.
Of course, you look at the way that the team is structured right now, and you're going into next year. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. You still contend that this team needs to go and get some major help out of the transfer portal. But are they missing right now with portal guys? Like, are they missing with those players?
I mean, they did a little bit earlier in the offseason. They're not right now because there's just not a lot of kids in the portal right now. I think after spring, you'll see some guys leave. Now, we've talked about this before on here that guys that are leaving after spring are guys that probably didn't make the cut somewhere else. So it's kind of an interesting scenario. But I still think they can improve through the transfer portal. The wide receiver room needs help. The edge group, like we just talked about, needs some help. The defensive line, you could probably use a little bit more depth there. Could use a younger guy or two on the offensive line. So,
I mean, you're going to get depth out of the spring portal window.
Kind of, yeah, but that's kind of where this team is at. That's kind of what they need.
Okay.
Outside of maybe getting a certified, strong, like, wide receiver one or wide receiver two to help out with Shedrick, outside of that, I don't think you necessarily need huge upgrades. I think your roster is kind of where it's at now.
Is it enough to win maybe 7 or 8 games if you do get that depth?
I think it could be, depending on how this team plays out. I mean, I just think a lot hinges on the quarterback and the wide receivers to the same extent, because you know what you have in Tank Bigsby, and that he's going to be the focal point of the offense along with Jarquez and Damari Austin once he gets here. You know you have a strong running game, and they're going to try and establish that. But are the quarterbacks and the wide receivers going to make enough big plays and just make enough plays in general?
So it's about development.
Yeah, to where the defense doesn't just stack the box every time and dare you to throw it on them.
So it comes down to passing game development is what I'm gathering.
Yeah, I think so.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, can the wide receivers take the next step forward, and can someone solidify themselves as quarterback one?
We'll see.
Yeah.
They've got about 8 practice weeks to do it. Let's take a quick break here on the Line. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com with you on the show today. One last segment, I should say, before Christian heads out. Christian, I want to talk some football recruiting. I'm just curious where everything stands, because Auburn has one guy in the 2023 class, and he is the biggest cheerleader ever. I'm loving Braden Joyner's enthusiasm on social media, the franchise, as he's called. But there are some big names that I feel like Auburn's trying to get in the mix with. Namely, and one dude that I do want to ask you about, Carver Montgomery's James Smith. What is that relationship like? He's a 5-star.
Yeah, they're trying there. I think they're a little on the outside looking in with him. There's also Quay Roussa, the edge rusher, also out of Montgomery. Both of those guys train at Madhouse, where Marlon Davidson was at. Some other Auburn guys have been at as well. And they were both here for junior day on Saturday. And, you know, they've been here several times. I think Auburn will be kind of in the mix, but just a little outside for both of those guys. Now, with that said, I've seen a lot of positives in the past 3, 4, 5 weeks or so in Auburn football recruiting. Now, I'm hesitant because we've seen positives before. We saw it last summer, and then the recruiting derailed. We saw it at the early signing period, and then they didn't get anybody in the late signing period. So I'm a little hesitant, but I've seen a lot of positives. They're getting kids here. Talking to them is different now. Talking to the kids, the reviews are more positive. They talk with Harsin a lot, and they have very positive things to talk or to say about Harsin. Some of the times I've talked to the kids, they said, I didn't get to speak with Coach Harsin. I'm getting a positive sense of where this staff is going.
So they're changing.
They're changing. They brought in other guys, guys like Steven Ruzick and some other guys kind of in the back end who are experienced, especially in this area, who I think have helped out a lot and can kind of help them out as a whole as they learn. And I think they have learned. And I think you're going to start to see some commits start to line up within the next couple weeks, month, 2 months or so. And Auburn's class will be in a good spot.
That's good to hear. Now, the question is, and I hate to be that guy, did the change come too late?
For this class? No, I think they're still okay. It came pretty close to being too late, but I think they're still okay. Because they, you know, they saw that they had a poor junior day in January, and they rectified that by having a junior day this weekend, and it was a lot more successful, brought in a lot more kids, even better kids, and it was a lot more just coordinated and organized, I guess I would say. Just a lot better overall.
It appears learned from this coaching staff does appear to me that it learns from its mistakes when it misses. So that's kind of my next question, or our last question of the day. Do you feel like this coaching staff going into year two is adapting, whether it's recruiting, on the field, yes, X's and O's, roster-wise, roster building, everything? Do you think they're adapting?
I think in every area they are. I think last year was a bit of a
culture shock.
Culture shock to some extent, yeah.
Just conference shock.
Conference shock, just moving across the country, moving from the Mountain West to the SEC. I mean, a huge difference there, and I think they are adapting. Like, genuinely being completely honest, I think they're adapting in every area. Recruiting, on the field, off the field, talking with players, stuff like that. I think they're adapting and getting better in every area. There's a lot of positives that I'm seeing.
Then now here is my last question then. Do you think it's going to be enough?
I really don't know, because so much hinges on the quarterback and the wide receiver play for me. Like, we just talked about it, but I'm just still really don't know what's going to happen there.
You know what's wild? That's probably the area where I have the most confidence in this coaching staff's ability to develop, because we've seen it.
Yeah.
I think they got the track record. I think they can get it done. Christian, I appreciate it, my man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com. Hour number two on the way.
You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line, Noah Gardner with you for the Thursday edition of the show. Thank you to Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com for joining us in that first hour. If you missed any of the show so far, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Jacob Goins out doing Lee Scott baseball. He's at Springwood School this afternoon. If you want to go check that ball game out, you can find it on AU100, 100.3 FM in the Auburn-Opelika area, or on the Lee Scott Sports Network Facebook page. That's how you can watch the video broadcast. That first pitch coming up at about 3:30 as it's a doubleheader between Lee Scott and Springwood. So that's where Jacob Goins is today. I'm holding down the fort here in the studio, and we've got an hour left here in today's program before the drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck from 4 to 6. So stay tuned for that. We're taking your calls all show long. Call in 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. We'll talk anything going on with you, whether it's Auburn football, Auburn basketball, Auburn baseball, whatever you want to talk about. We'll have that conversation with you in the sports world. Is tonight the end for Duke? Is tonight the end for Coach K as the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils? as Duke plays Texas Tech. Yes, we're going to start off hour number two here with Making Headlines. Making Headlines. And our first headline is the Sweet 16 fires up with action beginning tonight at 6 p.m. You got four games tonight. 6:09 on CBS, the one seed, the top overall seed, Gonzaga Bulldogs taking on the four seed Arkansas Razorbacks. That game on CBS, Gonzaga favored by 9.5. I wouldn't be shocked if Arkansas covered that or if they happen to pull the upset. The second game happening tonight, 6:29 p.m. on TBS. Why couldn't we have just said 6:10 and 6:30? Like, really? 6:29 p.m., TBS, Villanova favored by 5 over Cinderella, 11 seed Michigan. Villanova, the 2 seed in that region, the South region, that is. And it's just kind of weird to see 11-2 there with those two big names out there in the Sweet 16. Michigan Villanova does feel like, from a brand perspective, a great matchup. I'll be interested to see if the game lives up to the billing or if the Michigan run up to this point has just kind of been flash in the pan and they just found a way to chisel through the first weekend. And then, of course, getting to the 8 o'clock time slot, 8:39 p.m. on CBS, Texas Tech favored by a point. The three-seeded Red Raiders against the two-seed Duke Blue Devils. Duke, 30 wins here in the final season for Coach K. Will his run of coaching the Blue Devils come to an end tonight against the Red Raiders? My pick in my bracket was that it would, and I'm holding to that tonight. We'll break that down in a little while coming up on the show in one of our future segments. It'll be coming up in our 3:30 segment. And then the last game coming up tonight in the Sweet 16, 8:59 p.m., so you just want to say 9 o'clock. TBS, Arizona, 1.5-point favorites over 5-seed Houston. Arizona, the other 1-seed still in the bracket, along with Kansas, that will be playing tomorrow. Three of my four Final Four teams are still hanging around. My Final Four was Gonzaga, Houston, Kansas, and Kentucky. By Kentucky, that's been that way, of course. We've known that since the first night of the tournament. But Arizona and Houston, a big game tonight. I think Houston very well is the sleeper of the entire tournament. I would not be shocked. I'll be honest. I will be completely transparent. My NCAA bracket has Houston winning the national championship. I've got proof of it on my ESPN.com bracket. Nobody can say that I'm lying. When Houston wins it all this year, y'all just remember. Y'all remember your good old neighborhood friendly Noah Gardner on the radio said that Houston was going to win the national championship. It very well could come to a crashing end tonight. I think this is by far their toughest game that they have left all the way to the national championship. Like, any potential matchup they could get from here out until they make it to the national championship, I think would be easier than the team that they're playing tonight in the Arizona Wildcats. But I do think Houston's defense is going to provide quite the test for Arizona that they have not faced maybe since they played Tennessee in the non-conference. We all saw how that ended. And so we'll break that game down as well, coming up in that 3:30 segment as well. Later on in the show, just wanted to give everybody an update. The NCAA tournament is back tonight with the Sweet 16 firing up with action beginning once again at 6:09 p.m. Arkansas and Gonzaga, the first game tipping off tonight. A great slate this evening. I'd probably say the game that I am most excited to watch probably is that Houston-Arizona game, just because they're my national champion pick, and I want that to be right. But I understand that the real game tonight that's got everybody's attention is Texas Tech-Duke, and rightfully so. I think that's going to be a great ball game, but I do think Texas Tech is going to end the run for Mike Krzyzewski. Moving on to our second headline, staying in the basketball world. This is Auburn-related. We talked about this with Christian Clemente for about a segment and a half. Devin Cambridge entered the transfer portal for the Auburn Tigers earlier today. Of course, this is as expected, and this will not be the last, at least from my speculation. I don't have any inside information on anybody else being able to transfer or whatnot, or that they're going to choose to transfer, but I would not be shocked if other players made this decision, because in this day and age with the transfer portal, in this day and age with the NIL, look, guys want to play. It's the reality. Guys want to play. And so you can see some players on this team where it's obvious, where it makes sense that they're not going to play here and they would play somewhere else at a smaller school. And so it makes sense. This just happens. Now, could they stay because they love Auburn? Could they stay because they're great locker room guys and they want to be here? Yes, they could. But I also wouldn't be shocked if at some point, and I think coaching staffs do this. Now, I don't know if Auburn's going to do this, but I think coaching staffs do this across the country. If they say, hey, man, it might be in your best interest to play elsewhere. And they get nudged a little bit to make that decision. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's best for all parties, right? I think it's best for the guys that aren't playing, and I think it's best for the coaching staff who's trying to win. It's just the reality. And so, Devin Cambridge entering the transfer portal, this is best for both sides, I think. Devin Cambridge never really came on as a scorer at Auburn. His three-point shooting declined by about 12% from start to finish. That's not great. And, of course, he grew in other areas of the game, but the reality is rebounding and playing defense and the fact that it took 3 years to get to that point, you also need to be able to shoot. You need to be able to handle the basketball. You need to be able to have an offensive side of your game. And Devin Cambridge was hurting Auburn on the offensive end of the floor. And I hate to say that, and I hate to be like that, but objectively, watching Auburn play basketball, there are players on the team this year that when they were on the floor, they were offensive liabilities. And it makes Auburn easier to defend when five different guys don't have, when all five guys on the floor do not have a game, when they don't have something that they do well to be able to score the basketball, when they are not a scoring threat in some fashion, then it makes you easier to guard. And unfortunately for Auburn, by the end, half of every lineup that Auburn put on the floor, you want to know why Auburn didn't win in the postseason? Because half of every lineup that Auburn put on the floor was not a scoring threat, at least consistently. And they would make poor decisions with the basketball, and it would lead to runouts for the other team and fast break points. Go back and watch the Miami game. Bad shots led to 24 fast break points and turnovers. And at one point, Auburn had zero fast break points. I don't know if they finally got one. I'm sure they did, but like more than halfway through the game, Miami had Auburn beat 24-0 in that category. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. But I do wish Devin Cambridge the best, and this is where I'm getting to the side of things for where it's best for Devin Cambridge. He's going to get to play. I think he could play and start at another SEC team, and I would be extremely happy for him if that was the case. I'm not going to sit here and be like, no, you can't transfer to the SEC. You can't play against us. I would be more than happy to see this guy play at a place like Vanderbilt. I think his sister actually goes to Vanderbilt as well. Imagine if he played at Vanderbilt and his brother teams up with him at Vanderbilt. That makes Vanderbilt better. Makes Vanderbilt a lot better. And I think Jerry Stackhouse is a good offensive coach and can bring out some things in him. And I'm not just advocating for him to go to Vanderbilt. I'm just saying a place like that, that's an example. I think he makes Georgia better. I'm trying to think if he makes Florida better. Probably not. I'm just going up and down teams in my head. I think he makes a lot of teams in this league better if he goes there. But Auburn has crossed over a threshold to major power status in college basketball. And I don't know, I don't think Devin Cambridge makes Auburn better. I think Auburn can go and find somebody that maybe can shoot the three a little bit better, that fits this system a little bit better. I'm not saying Devin Cambridge is a bad basketball player. I just think he fits in a different system better than what Auburn is running. And Auburn needs a three-point shooter. As Christian Clemente said in our first segment when we were discussing the Devin Cambridge transfer portal news. So that's the situation with Auburn basketball as Devin Cambridge enters the transfer portal, and Auburn now going to have to find someone to replace him, and I wouldn't be shocked if they go and find a shooter, and I wouldn't be shocked if there are more guys to come along that are going to announce that they're going to the transfer portal. This is not done yet. Next up on Making Headlines, just bouncing around different college sports now. We're to college baseball. UAB baseball knocked off Alabama yesterday, 5-4 at yesterday's midweek action. That's a big result for UAB. In-state, that's a big result. Of course, Auburn plays all of these teams. Auburn plays UAB, Auburn plays South Alabama, Auburn plays Troy. And Alabama did the same thing in baseball and is doing the same thing in baseball. And those teams relish the opportunity to play their in-state school. And you understand why. They want to be able to beat them. But Alabama doesn't play other in-state schools in anything. They don't play Troy. They don't play South Alabama. They definitely don't play UAB in anything. And you can look at the other sports that Auburn plays in-state schools in. And basketball, namely. They've played UAB. They've played South Alabama. They play those teams.
Football, they've played Alabama State, Alabama A&M. Now, they haven't played South Alabama, and they haven't played UAB, which I think Auburn should not shy away from that. I don't see anything wrong with doing that. I understand football, those two programs have been a little bit more reluctant. Alabama and Auburn both have been reluctant to play teams inside this state, aside from D2 opponents for Auburn. But Alabama, I don't think, has played Alabama State or Alabama A&M, right? Have they played North Alabama? They play football. I don't know if they played North Alabama. Typically go out of state. And so this result's significant. This is the only sport that Alabama really plays an in-state opponent in, or at least of the major sports that I can think of. They don't really play in-state teams. And UAB just beat them in the midweek. And UAB's pretty good at baseball. 14-5 now in the year. Alabama's down to 13-9. I think this says a little bit about where Alabama's at with their baseball program this year, that they lose to UAB. And sure, you could say, oh, it's a midweek game, but this is not the first midweek game that Alabama has dropped. It's not the first one. They lost to UT Martin. Bad. Now they've lost to UAB. So it's not a great look for Alabama baseball. And I think there are several teams that are struggling with programs in their state, and Auburn's not one of them. Auburn is doing some things that other teams in the SEC West are not doing right now in their non-conference schedule. LSU dropped both of their midweek games to Louisiana Tech. When LSU has played any good baseball team this year, they've lost. The only, like, decent team they've beaten is Oklahoma. Like, decent. Lost to Baylor. Lost to Texas. Lost to Louisiana Tech twice. Lost 2 out of 3 to Texas A&M. Congrats, you beat Maine. Wonderful. But I'm thinking that LSU maybe is a little overrated right now. Just kind of bounce around the SEC West and kind of a flood of thought here on SEC baseball and why I think Auburn's in a better position than some of these other teams right now. Auburn's winning the games that they should. And, of course, they took one against the number one team of the country this past weekend against Ole Miss. And granted, pitching definitely needs help. They need to get their guys back. If they can get back healthy, this pitching staff is still ranked top 6 in the SEC in major pitching categories, even with the atrocities that have happened on the mound recently over the last weekend. You have double-digit runs in 2 different games. You have 15 runs to Ole Miss on Saturday. They're still top 6 in the SEC in major pitching categories, right? They didn't have a great weekend against Middle Tennessee State. If they can establish more consistency and get some of that depth back in the pitching staff, this offense is good enough for Auburn to be an NCAA tournament team. I would not be shocked if Auburn found a way to finish top 4 in the SEC West. It's shaking down like that right now. Mississippi State's out of the polls. They're 12-9. Alabama's 13-9. Just lost another midweek game. Lost 2 out of 3 to Florida, which Florida's really good, but I still don't think this Alabama team's that good. They haven't shown a ton yet to make me believe that they're that good of a baseball team. LSU, once again, talked about them a few moments ago. LSU has not lived up to their top 10 billing that they've had this year. When they have played a good baseball team, they have lost. They have shown significant weakness to those teams. And then you got Arkansas, you got Ole Miss. Those two teams are at the top of the West. Trying to think who else I'm leaving out. A&M's another team that's just kind of hanging around at 13-9. And granted, they did take 2 out of 3 against LSU, but I think that says more about LSU than it does about Texas A&M. They're winnable series that going into this year you thought were going to be really difficult, like LSU and Mississippi State. And granted, those series will still be battles because they have good players. But I think Auburn has the real chance. If they can keep getting healthy in the pitching staff and keep stroking it at the plate, Auburn's got a real shot to finish top 4 in the SEC West and be an NCAA tournament team. I think they're a bubble team. In my mind, I see Auburn as a bubble team. Now, if in bracketology's out there, they may not be a bubble team. Other people out there may not have come onto that yet. But I think Auburn, in my mind right now, the caliber of team that I view them as is a bubble team. Now, will they continue on that way? Of course, once again, they're going to have to keep hitting until the pitching gets back. And I still think they need to hit at that point. I mean, this team has little margin for error, of course. But I think they could get off the bubble and squarely into the tournament, not hosting or anything like that. But I wouldn't be shocked if they found a way in as a 2 seed somewhere in someone's regional, Florida State, because we all know Auburn plays in Tallahassee every time, or in Clemson, South Carolina, which they're not going to host either. Clemson's not very good this year, but I'm just saying, you know, Georgia Tech, somewhere like that. a place that Auburn often goes because of travel time and whatnot. It makes sense. But Auburn baseball has given me a lot of optimism, especially with the struggles that we're seeing around the SEC West and then the Eastern opponents that they get. South Carolina got swept. Kentucky got swept. These are winnable series. And Auburn gets both of those teams. The back end's favorable for Auburn. You get to finish out the year against Kentucky and Alabama. So I think there's a real chance for Auburn to play their way in. Of course, you still got to be successful in the SEC tournament, and that comes back to pitching depth and whatnot. But this team's at least hitting a lot better than we've seen them in recent years. Moving on to our last headline here in making headlines. Of course, everybody saw the Tyreek Hill deal to the Miami Dolphins. We're bouncing out to the NFL now. The Miami Dolphins have really loaded up talent on their offense for Tua Tagovailoa. Terron Armstead at left tackle. I mean, they have brought it in. They've got guys on that offense now. You talk about Jaylen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, Mike Gesicki. Their offensive line actually looks somewhat decent and competent now. Raheem Mostert's going there. They got backs. They got receivers. They got offensive linemen. Question is, do they have quarterback? Trevor goes, eee. It's like, got milk? Got quarterback? Nothing against Tua, but he hasn't shown me yet that I wonder if Tua is going to make everything around him worse or if he's going to make everything around him better. That's the question. Actually, let me rephrase that. Maybe this is a better question to ask. Is Tua with the Miami Dolphins, and don't act like Miami wasn't asking this question a year ago too, because they were inquiring about Deshaun Watson. So let's be honest, okay? There was surely a lot of storm there about whether or not Tua was going to be the quarterback in Miami. But here's the question that I think Miami should be asking. Which is more likely? Is Tua going to make everything around him worse, or is everything around Tua going to make Tua better? Which is more likely? You think Trevor says that he thinks the offense, producer Tevor, Trevor behind Tevor, I don't know where I got that. By the way, Tevin Brown's not a first-round pick. I completely dreamed that. I don't know where I saw that. That's a joke from back in the first half hour where I thought Tevin Brown out of Murray State was a potential NBA first-round draft pick. I completely whiffed on that one. My bad. I dreamt that 100%. But Trevor, producer here today with me, says that he thinks that Tua is going to be made better by the players around him. Says a deep ball to Tyreek's all that he needs. I am not buying it, Trevor. I'm not buying it one bit. I'm not buying it. I think Tua is going to make everything else around him worse. Tua has not had to be much more than an RPO quarterback in the NFL. And when the best that your quarterback can do is quick routes, quick reads, high lows, when that's the best that you've got behind center, it significantly shrinks the field for your talent and your speed and your receivers. And we've seen many occasions where major receivers left a place where they were absolute stars and they were not as good at the next place. And that's not just because of Tua either.
You think it's because of Patrick Mahomes maybe?
No, or just maybe the offense. I got to get Trevor on a mic. I just think that you take Tyreek Hill out of the Chiefs offense. Is it the same system in Miami that's gonna have him producing the way that he is? He doesn't have Travis Kelce around him anymore. He doesn't have the running backs that they have. He doesn't have Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't have all the weapons. He doesn't have the mind, the brain of Andy Reid anymore. I think that's going to make a big difference. Back on the line on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Got about 30 minutes left in the show for today, and then it'll be The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Pack. Shorter segment here as we get into some NCAA tournament talk. Got the Sweet 16 coming up. We're going to break down all those games over these next two segments, and that's what we're getting into now. Noah Gardner here with you in the studio. Just me in the studio today. Trevor producing the show. Call in 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. We'll talk to you about anything on your mind. Auburn football, Auburn basketball, Auburn baseball. Give us a call and ask us a question or give us your thoughts on anything happening in the sports world. It's time to get into the Sweet 16, and we're going to break down each of these games. Talk about potential Elite Eight matchups that could be coming along. But I've got a question or two for each of these games, and We're going to start off with 4-seed Arkansas against 1-seed Gonzaga. The first game tonight, approximately 6:10 p.m. tip, CBS. Gonzaga favored by 9.5 points in that West Region Sweet 16. I think that's a lot, but to be fair, you look at Gonzaga's last couple of games, even despite slow starts, they found a way to pull through. They beat Georgia State, of course, by 21 after being tied in that game for the majority of the time, and then barely got past Memphis by 4, but they did turn a 10-point deficit to a 10-point lead at one point in that game. You look for Arkansas, they have had two close calls against mid-major opponents in their first two games, even you could say small conference opponents for these two schools. They have played Vermont and New Mexico State. They've played a 13 seed and a 12 seed through their first two games of the tournament, and they have barely squeezed their way through. 75-71 against Vermont, and then 53-48 against New Mexico State, and it was a late rally for Arkansas that helped them get past New Mexico State as well. By the way, New Mexico State's head coach was hired by Mississippi State, in case you didn't know that. Mississippi State moving on from Ben Hallen just doesn't seem right. I do not like all the moves that the SEC has made this past offseason for coaching changes. I feel like a lot of coaching talent has left this league, or in the case of Mike White, will probably be out of this league soon, because I don't see Georgia turning things around with Mike White either. But a lot of talent has left this league. Will Wade, Frank Martin. Once again, Mike White's success in this league will be greatly diminished by the fact that he is the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs. Ben Howland. Who else has gone on? Who else am I forgetting about that's moved on from their coach? Konzo Martin. I mean, I'm going to be real. These are some big coaches that have succeeded at a lot of different places. Have even succeeded at the schools. I think there was rash decisions made by Mississippi State and South Carolina. And I don't think they replaced their coaches with better options. You're going to have a hard time convincing me that it's not a risk moving on from Frank Martin to Chattanooga's head coach, or from Konzo Martin at Missouri to Cleveland State's head coach, or Ben Howland to New Mexico State's head coach. It's a whole different ballgame that these schools are, that these coaches are walking into now in the SEC, with the coaches at the top running this league. They run this. I'm just saying, it's going to be really difficult for those guys to find success. And then Mike White's like, I think I need to try my luck at Georgia. They may have just had the war. They won 6 games, but I think I need to try this. To be fair, Florida, I don't know if they upgraded from Mike White to Todd Golden. They could be very similar. I think they may be doing exactly the same thing that they did with Mike White the first time. Mike White came from Louisiana Tech and had a 27-win season. Was excellent. That's why Florida hired him. They love the guy. He was a hot hire off the mid-major market. So is San Francisco's Todd Golden. But the question I have about that is, will he – and, man, I've gone on to a tangent here. My question about Florida hiring Todd Golden is, like, will he be able to recruit Florida? And I've had a couple of people say, well, Florida recruits itself. And I said, yeah, how'd that work out for Mike White? Being outside the top 40 in the last two recruiting classes. How'd that work? I've seen this story before at several teams across this league where they hire a guy who's like, sure, he's a great X's and O's dude, but like, is he able to acclimate to the SEC? Also, was it just the perfect storm at San Francisco, or was it the perfect storm at New Mexico State, which I don't think that's true because they've had extended success in New Mexico State. I think he actually is a pretty good coach. Just the question there is, can he win at Mississippi State? And once again, it's a whole different ballgame when you come to the SEC. But it's a whole different world from coaching at Chattanooga to having to go to South Carolina. From Cleveland, yeah, you're right. Trevor mentions Cleveland State to Missouri. You're all of a sudden leaving a school at a mid-major small conference level where, understandably, like, and it's hard to do this and it's hard to repeat success, but most of those schools are not the top dog in their conference every year. They might be in the top 3 or top 4 of their conference every year, but they may not be the top dog every year. But you're leaving from being at the peak of your conference, which was a small or mid-major conference, to going to be a rebuilding project or the underbelly of the Southeastern Conference, bottom of the totem pole. That sounds problematic. I'm going to be real. I think they're going to struggle. I'm just saying that. I think a lot of coaching talent's left the league, and I don't know if it's been exchanged for as good. Let's take a quick break here on the Line. You're on the line with Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. 33 minutes in hour number two. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You know it's the dead period of sports. When Auburn basketball's thrown out of the NCAA tournament, spring football's around, just there's less traffic on the phone lines when it gets to this time of year. But we do want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. This is something that I want to bring up before we get to talk about the Sweet 16, which I got onto a tangent with talking about SEC coaching changes in basketball recently. But I just want to point this out at football, and I want to ask the public this, and if you want to call in, reach out. And I asked this question to Christian Clemente, and it's not thought about this way because it's about to be April. So you got April, May, June, July. You got 4 months until fall camp starts, right? You got 4 whole months until fall camp starts. But think about this. 8A's April 9th. Today is March 24th. So what, we got 2 weeks until 8A. So 2 weeks of practice left, and then you get a month to practice before the football season starts. So you got like 6 to 8 weeks left, maybe. 8 weeks tops, I would imagine. And you don't practice every day because there's NCAA restrictions like that. You only have so many practices in between. So like breaking it down of like total coaching supervised, like them actually being able to work with the players, like total practice time left before Auburn football plays a game, 6 to 8 weeks. And it's not even that much because, once again, they don't play every day. That's wild to think about. Now, of course, there's all the time in the weight room in the summer and getting your body ready, and then the players can practice on their own and do their own thing in the summer, and then there's all the film sessions and everything and team meetings and whatnot. That's all very important. I'm not discounting that. But on-field practice time, think about this. 6 to 8 weeks left, probably, until Auburn plays another game. And that's crazy because, and maybe this, I don't want to make people panic about this, but, like, do you think that's enough time? That's my question to you now is, do you think, looking at it from that lens, with how much practice time Auburn legitimately has left, and with the personnel on the roster, do you think that is legitimately like enough time for this team to be ready for the regular season? And granted, that every year you only have about that much time at this time of year, but like this is more about the personnel on the roster. Like, does Auburn have enough time this offseason? Is one offseason enough for this coaching staff to be able to turn around and develop and move Auburn's needle beyond where it was at the end of last year? Because I said this as soon as the season ended. I said Auburn's got to go and find receivers, offensive linemen, and a quarterback. They've got to go and fix all of that this offseason, or else this team's probably not going to a bowl game. I said that in January. I said that after the bowl game in December. I think I said that the day of the bowl game, actually, when I came on air. I was rocking solo that day in the studio, and I was talking about the bowl game. And I remember saying that towards the end of the show. They did not do anything successful this offseason to fix those problems. At this point, I have not seen that. Now, it helps that many players are coming back that we didn't expect to come back, namely offensive linemen, and it helps that Shedrick Jackson came back. But nonetheless, you look at the roster up and down, like what we saw offensively at the end of last year for Auburn football is not a bowl game. It's not a bowl team. It's not a bowl team. And they got 6 to 8 weeks of on-field practice to get there. Trevor says, we don't even know who our quarterback is. That may be a good thing. That is one of the exciting things, I think, about this offseason. And I did say with Christian Clemente, before we got out of here with AuburnSports.com, I did say with Christian Clemente, that I was most confident maybe in the development of the quarterback position than maybe any of the other position groups on the roster. And I say that because I think Brian Hartson's got a strong track record, and we saw guys get better legitimately last year. And so I legit – the reports that you hear, the word that you hear of quarterbacks being better in practice, of T.J. Finley being better, and, you know, Robbie Ashford looking a little sharp, and you know, Zach Calzada can't go through spring or anything like that really fully, but – the reports that you're hearing of T.J. Finley being better, I believe those. I believe that legitimately. Now, has the margin improvement's the key there, though, because he had a long way to go. But if T.J. Finley has legitimately made that movement already, just in the short time period, think about it, it's only been a couple of weeks of spring practice. We still got like 6 to 8 weeks. See, notice how my tone just changed. We still got 6 to 8 weeks of practice. Look at how he got better that quickly. I'm just messing around with everybody. But seriously, though, I am confident in this coaching staff's track record of developing QBs. And so I do believe the reports out there are the word out there that TJ Finley's better and that this whole room, you know, from top to bottom, I know Demetrius Davis just transferred out, but I think that's more of a playing time issue. I do think that all of these guys are better and are learning and are developing. The question is, does that margin that they need to get to, do they clear that gap to be able to get Auburn to a bowl game next year? That'll be the question to ask. But I think Auburn has had worse quarterback situations going into a regular season than this. I think this is better than going into Jeremy Johnson. I think, and everybody thought that was going to be good, but that obviously was not good, and that team made a bowl game. Of course, they had Sean White waiting in the wings, who is better than probably any of the guys on this roster currently, I would argue. But there maybe is a higher ceiling for some of the guys on this roster. I don't know. A lot to break down there, and we'll keep breaking that down throughout the rest of the week. We got one more show this week, and then we'll keep talking about it into next week as Jacob comes back onto the show. But I want to switch gears here to talking a little college basketball. We're going to break down the Sweet 16 matchups. I've got some questions about these matchups to ask everybody, as well as that I'll answer myself. Number 4, Arkansas against number 1, Gonzaga. That's the seed lines, of course, 6:09 p.m. on CBS. Will Gonzaga's slow starts finally catch up to them? Because they've started slow in their first two games, had a double-digit deficit to Memphis at halftime. They were tied with Georgia State, if not losing, for pretty much 3/4 of that game. Will slow starts finally catch up to Gonzaga now that they are playing Arkansas? And my answer to that question is no. Gonzaga is going to win tonight against Arkansas. Arkansas has not played good basketball over their last 3 games. I think they did fine against LSU and Tennessee back in the regular season, but their last 3 games I don't think have been very good from an offensive standpoint. They're not the most efficient offensive team in the SEC from a field goal percentage standpoint. And everything that they want to do works towards getting to the rim. They're not a great 3-point shooting team. They've got some shooters, but that's not, that once again, not efficient. It's decent. It can add some help to the offensive, you know, to the offensive load. But everything that they want to do is about getting their athleticism towards the rim and scoring at the rim. And, you know, there's a certain guy named Chet Holmgren. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's like 7'2". He blocks a lot of shots. There's also a dude named Drew Timmy. Kind of, you know, Fairly Odd Parents. I'm joking. You got Drew Timmy, you know, also. I don't know if you've heard of him either. He was an All-American, you know. He's 6'11". He's really good, too. They're both great defenders in the paint. And I think their Arkansas is going to have a really hard time scoring tonight against these guys. If you could only muster 53 points against New Mexico State, who, granted, was a pretty good defensive team out of the WAC, but we're talking about the WAC. We're talking about the WAC. We're not talking about Gonzaga. And I know Gonzaga's in the WCC, but there's a difference there. Gonzaga is a major power in college basketball, the number 1 overall seed. There is true beef in that on that defense for Gonzaga, and I think that's the best thing about Gonzaga. If Gonzaga's going to get beat this year, it's because their offense didn't show up to play. And granted, I think Arkansas is going to be able to guard Gonzaga today. I think their athleticism is going to give Gonzaga some issues. But ultimately, I think I trust Gonzaga's methodical nature on offense, the ability to slow down a game, stonewall an opponent like Arkansas who likes to run the floor, is going to rebound really well, close out possessions. I think that's going to be a real problem for Arkansas tonight. I think they're going to go empty on a lot of possessions. And Gonzaga's going to go down there, slow the game down, methodical offense. Mark Few's going to run his plays. It's just going to be 25-second shot clock possessions, splash. Another 24 seconds, layup. Another 23 seconds, splash. And all of a sudden, you know, 3 minutes has gone off the clock of game time and they've scored 9 points, but you've scored 2. I mean, it's going to be a defensive affair, I think, and I think that favors Gonzaga a little bit more than it does Arkansas because they are comfortable playing at a slower tempo. Next game, number 11, Michigan against number 2, Villanova. Once again, seed lines there, 6:29 p.m. on TBS. Does the slipper still fit for the Michigan Wolverines? It's kind of weird to call them a Cinderella team, and they've been in this position before. We have seen double-digit seed Michigan teams, before Juwan Howard was the coach, go on runs, and you know they've got talent. We've known they've had talent all year long. They beat some good teams. They also lost to some bad teams. They had a bad record this year. And I personally did not feel like they deserved to be in the tournament. Is that changed by the fact that they've gone on this run in the NCAA tournament? No. I still don't think they deserve to be in the tournament. Congratulations to them, though, for winning their two games against Colorado State and Tennessee. They have played a 6 and a 3 seed. They have played the hardest teams that they could have played up to this point based on seed line, and they have won those games. They have played well. It's a whole nother beast now. Villanova's got the size in the front court to, I think, neutralize. I think they've got a good enough front court to neutralize Hunter Dickinson, and that's the secret. Take Hunter Dickinson out of the game for Michigan. I think the backcourt for Villanova is operating at a higher level right now than Michigan's is. I think it's operating at a higher level than Michigan's is. Villanova can play some defense, and I think that's going to stymie Michigan a little bit. And I think Villanova's ultimately going to find the points at the end. Villanova's played a pretty tough tournament run, too, at this point. I know they got a 15 seed in the first round, but they're getting Ohio State in the second round. Ohio State was better than a 7 seed when they play at their best, and they gave Villanova their best performance. I think Villanova's going to win that game tonight as well. So I think the slipper no longer fits for the Michigan Wolverines. This is where it comes to an end for Juwan Howard's bunch. But still, if you had told me after Juwan Howard threw a punch after the Wisconsin game that Michigan was going to make the Sweet 16, I would have laughed in your face. Maybe not in your face. I would have laughed from an appropriate distance away. But I would have said that's laughable. I would have disagreed vehemently with you. I would have disagreed probably that Michigan was going to make the NCAA tournament. Because I made a statement that they were going to win out. I said Michigan's going to lose out from here. And they found a way to beat Ohio State, and that's what got them in the tournament. But they almost all but lost out. Ohio State was the only team that they beat down that stretch. I mean, they struggled on their way to the NCAA tournament. They're 17-14, and I still stand by that. I don't think they deserve to be in. Of course, the NCAA tournament committee allowed them in, and they've made the most of it. Once again, I would have laughed. Somebody told me that this team, after Juwan Howard threw a punch, I probably would have laughed before he threw a punch if somebody said to me that they were going to make the Sweet 16. But it definitely seems more and more preposterous that was going to happen after he got suspended. And, man, they have been one of the better stories in the NCAA tournament up to this point, and one of the better runs up to this point. And the fact that we've got so many double-digit seeds, this is a statistical anomaly. It is not a high percentage. It's less than 10%, much less than 10% of all like double-digit seeds like making it to the Sweet 16. Like, this does not happen. And the fact that we have an 11 seed, a 15 seed, an 8 seed, an 11 seed, and a 10 seed, all in the NCAA tournament playing over the next 2 days, 5 seeds. That statistically, I'm going to be honest with you, break it down, have absolutely no business being in the Sweet 16, much less the Elite Eight. It's a statistical anomaly that an 11 or a 10 seed makes the Elite Eight, and we're going to for sure have at least one of those in Miami or Iowa State. And I'll be honest with you, Miami keeps playing the way that they're playing. Kansas and Providence are not the hardest matchups in the world for you to just luck up and find yourself in the Final Four. They're that close. They're that close. And if you get Iowa State and Kansas in the Elite Eight, newsflash, they played in the Big 12. They played some pretty close games, some pretty good games. It is not that far-fetched that you're going to have an 11 seed in the Final Four. It's not. North Carolina, I think, has a real shot to run the table and go to the Final Four. I mean, I think there's some real optimism there for there to be. This could be a really weird Final Four. I really hope St. Peter's makes it. I mean, how crazy would that be, though? If a 15 seed, I mean, you should be rooting for that. A 15 seed in the Final Four? Goodness gracious. That would be epic. We got two more games to talk about when we come back. Stay tuned. Ramping up the Thursday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner with you on the show today. Jacob Goins doing some Lee Scott baseball. That's where he's on assignment right now. And so I'm rounding out the show today. Big thank you to Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com for joining us on the program this afternoon. Of course, following us on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. It'll be The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. If you missed any of today's show, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Going to wrap up the show today. Still talking about the Sweet 16. Number 3, Texas Tech against number 2, Duke. 8:39 p.m. on CBS. What to expect from potentially Coach K's last game. And I'm going to be real. I'm expecting a Texas Tech win tonight. I had this matchup in my bracket from start. And I expect the Texas Tech to win this game, and I think it all comes down to the defense for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. I think they have all the tools. I think they have all the makings of a team that could go to the national championship, especially the Final Four. But I definitely think when you look at that side of your bracket, get past Duke and Gonzaga, if they make it to the Final Four, any team that comes from the bottom, North Carolina, UCLA, St. Peter's, or Purdue, Purdue's got a great, like, you should have some confidence. Purdue's the one team where I'd be like, yeah, that may not work out. But the other three, I think you would have great confidence in playing if you're Texas Tech. And you share a seed line with Purdue anyway. That's 2-3 seeds. And I think Purdue's ultimately going to come out of that region anyway. But still, I just, you break it down. Texas Tech, from a defensive standpoint, able to switch everything. Positionless basketball, have a lot of 6'6 to 6'8 guys on their roster. Extremely athletic. Now, offensively, they struggle. I think Duke's going to be able to guard them fairly well, too. I think both of these teams are going to guard well. But Duke does not play with a whole lot of urgency. Slow you down. And I think it's possible that they get caught up in the moment, in the pressure of this run. And that's why I think it's kind of an interesting decision that Coach K made it public that he was retiring, that this was his retirement run. Because what was this season about all year long? You tell me, what was Duke basketball this season all about?
The end of Coach K.
The end of Coach K, that's right. The end of Coach K. It was all about Coach K's swan song, the end. And in doing that, I think it heaped unnecessary pressure on these players. I think it heaped this potential to where they get lost in these moments and they put that pressure on themselves and they get lost, and then they've lost. And we've seen them lose some games by, like, head-scratching margins, right? And I think it's hard for them to play under that scrutiny. And tonight, that pressure is going to be present. Present. Okay? Attendance check. Pressure here. It's going to be 100%. And Texas Tech's defense is all about that pressure. And Duke doesn't play with a whole lot of urgency on the offensive end. I could see this game getting away from them a little bit. I don't know if it's going to be a blowout, but I definitely like Texas Tech to win this one. And then the last game to talk about, number 5, Houston. 5-seed Houston against 1-seed Arizona, 8:59 p.m. on TBS. Houston is my national champion pick, and that is not in my remake bracket. That was from start to finish. That was my selection. I could come to a smoldering end tonight against the 1-seed Arizona, but I also think this is going to be the toughest team that they will play on that side of the bracket before they get to the national championship. Now, whoever they play from the other side, if they get Texas Tech or Gonzaga or Purdue, whoever they play from that, or maybe a really hot North Carolina, somebody like that, is going to be a really tough matchup. Probably just as tough as this one. But we all saw TCU almost pull the unthinkable. We have seen this Arizona team struggle against strong defensive teams that slow you down, can clear possessions. Let me just break it down for you. Houston's great at with their two-point percentage. Great at getting to the rim and scoring. They've got three-point shooters as well. They're like 37% from three. They average like 30. They collect like 37% of their offensive rebound opportunities. That's like number one in the country. They clear the glass on defense. 80% of those defensive rebound opportunities. That's going to put you in the top 25 of defensive rebounding percentages. They force a lot of turnovers. I mean, this team does, statistically, this team flew under the radar. They are not a 5-seed. They only got a 5-seed because they played in the American this year, and the American was bad, and people didn't trust them. But there is no reason why this team can't go back to the Final Four. They went last year. There's no reason why they can't do it again. They're that good. Statistically, this team is, aside from Gonzaga, the most impressive team in college basketball. And I think they're probably more legit than Gonzaga. I think they're going to win the national championship. Now, that could come to an end tonight, and I think Arizona's got the offensive ability, runs a lot of great stuff on offense. They've got the players on offense to where they can – they can pull through. They can win the game. I think this is going to be, honestly, probably the toughest team that they play left in the bracket. But honestly, in my other bracket, I have Arizona winning. I have two brackets. I got Houston, Arizona. So the winner of this game goes on to win the national championship in my mind. And then I'll probably decide which bracket I root for from here out, too. Oh, man. And neither of them have been great, I'll tell you. But I still have three of my final four picks. And my national champion, and my two national championship picks, and my national champion, and the bracket that I'm talking about with Houston. So it's gone fine, and I realize nobody cares about my bracket. To be fair, I don't really care about your bracket either. I'm just saying, this is a hot take, and if Houston wins it, that will have been a big, bold prediction to come through. So it's worth pointing out. It's worth pointing out. So Sweet 16 picks for today. Gonzaga over Arkansas, Villanova over Michigan, Texas Tech over Duke, and Houston over Arizona. Last question I'm going to leave you guys here with today. Which upset do I believe is the most likely to happen? I've got two upsets happening by seed line. Texas Tech over Duke and Houston over Arizona. That's tough, man. That is really tough. Which one is more likely to happen? Because I think, like, in most people's minds, they're both, like, really difficult. I mean, Texas Tech's probably the one that's more likely in most people's minds. But I'm not going back on what I said. I believe in Houston to win tonight. I need to go find a place to go and watch that Houston game. I think that's going to be a great game over Arizona. Notice how I said the Houston game. It's not the Arizona game. It's the Houston game. Not a fan of the Pac-12. That's it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.